Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go! 1-on-3, 1-on-3!
You're listening to the best of the Dolphins.
Yeah, yeah, boy, man. Keep hands on 2-1-2.
A weekly mix of AM 560 Sports, WQAM's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Yeah, we got some good matchups coming up here. Baldy, we'll jump into those with you in just a second. I just wanted to get your take on just the way that the Dolphins wrapped up their season. We know the Tyreek Hill deal was a little rough there in the locker room, and then Stephen Ross comes out after the game and says, we're not making any changes. We're going to run this thing back with Chris Greer, with Mike McDaniel. I guess the question, Baldy, is can that group get over this hump of being essentially a 500 team?
That's the challenge. I mean, I was there week 18, against the Jets. I announced that game and I saw, a horrible performance. I think Aaron Rodgers might have played his best game all year that day. That's not a good way to end. I understand that, the scoreboard watching in Denver's blown out Kansas City and they're out of the playoffs, but still, I mean, the performance was horrible. It's interesting because, Vic Fangio was there last year and nobody seemed to really like him. And he's got the number one defense in football, again, in Philadelphia. That's got to be a little disheartening. Now, Anthony Weaver is getting some head coach consideration. I thought he would. But he's not Vic Fangio. And they had him. And, defensively, they were good. They weren't great this year. And you just wonder, while the offense struggles to run the football and put an offensive line together and stay healthy up front and to keep Tua healthy and all that stuff, could they have been building the number one defense in football the way the Eagles did? I mean, that's kind of like, if I'm looking in the rearview mirror, I'm taking a hard look at that.
Well, hold on, Baldy. Eagles have way different personnel than the Miami Dolphins. And if you look at the defense that the Dolphins had, one, they weren't built properly. No pass rushing, limited in the trenches. Calais Campbell came in and saved the season. But then let's look at the secondary. Javon Holland, and this is one thing I wanted to ask you. You have been a very big Javon Holland supporter, believer. You thought he was last year, the previous year, one of the elite safeties in the league. What happened this year?
Well, first of all, I mean, I don't think he was healthy much of the year. That's part, but I don't know exactly all the issues there. But I want my safeties, Omar, to take the ball away. And Javon's not taking it away. He used to be forcing fumbles, get his hands on footballs. Like, I don't see that right now. And, you look at these safeties that are playing Detroit. I mean, they're taking a ball away in record numbers. You look at the Minnesota defense. You look at the Eagles defense over the last 6 weeks. I mean, they're taking the ball away in record numbers. They took it away 4 times on Sunday against Green Bay, 5 times against Washington week 16. I don't see the Dolphins doing that right now.
Yeah, I don't think they had the pass rush to do it, but I hear your perspective.
Well, I mean, look, losing Jalen Phillips is a big deal. 2 years in a row. I mean, he's an elite talent. And I thought he was turned a corner before he got hurt last year on Black Friday against the Jets. To get injured again this year like this, I don't know how much you can count on him. They didn't get, Chop Robinson, I thought, developed as the season went on. I thought he got better. The interior was really strong with Zach and Calais and Benito. I thought that was a really strong presence inside there. But ultimately, they weren't taking the ball away.
Brian Baldinger here with us on QAM. Baldy, we spend a lot of time talking about Tua here, as you very well know. The Dolphins had a backup quarterback issue this year as well. If you were the Miami Dolphins, what would be your mindset heading into next season, knowing that you have a quarterback in Tua who not only has not been able to get you over the hump, but has been injury prone? Is backup quarterback something that you think this team really needs to focus on? Or would you just go all together and look into the draft and see if maybe in the second round or so, if you can get some guy and start developing him into your next starter? What road would you take here? Would you go veteran or would you go draft?
I never understood, going after Tyler Huntley. I mean, he didn't fit anything that they did. That made no sense to me. And then what they had there wasn't good enough. So we knew Skylar Thompson wasn't good enough. So, I mean, I think it's a high priority. I think you got to bring Tua back. I think he wants to come back. I think the coach wants him back. But they got to start developing somebody that can really play and really win games and really fits what you're trying to do.
But is this the time to develop him now, Baldy? Because you've got a GM and you've got a head coach who basically are out season. Is this the time to draft a quarterback to develop him, or you got to go with a veteran?
Well, I mean, I think you have to. I don't know the veterans that are going to be available, but it's hard to develop a quarterback while you have a quarterback. I understand that part, but I think you got to get somebody in the building where if this happens again to Tua, where you got to go, we're now ready to move on. I mean, Jalen Hurts was a third-round pick. He was the second-round pick. He was the 53rd pick in the draft. When they drafted him, they didn't really want to replace Carson Wentz, but he ended up beating Carson Wentz out and became ultimately a better player. That can happen if you pick the right guy. And maybe it's a good challenge, and maybe it's the right challenge, but I would look at getting somebody in the building that has a future and that can play, and when the time is right, if the time is right, you insert them, and maybe you don't look back. But I don't think going the veteran route, I don't know who's going to be available. I mean, Kirk Cousins might be available if that was possible. Maybe, but he looked awful the last five games he played. You have to determine if that was a slump or if that's who he truly is at this point. So I don't know, exactly the guys, but I would go with the younger guy at a college and see if I can get him in the second or third round and start to see if he can become a guy.
Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger here with us on QAM. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. All right, Baldy, if we can, I just want to run down all these games, these four games that we have coming up. There'll be a lot of couch time this weekend between Saturday and Sunday. We got three games that have big point spreads. And then, of course, we have the main course, Bills and Ravens. We'll get to that in a moment. Chiefs and Texans. Let's start there. Saturday, 4:30. Does Houston have any sort of shot going into Kansas City to pull the massive upset?
Well, they went in there a month ago, week 16, and they didn't get blown out. It was a 24-19 game into the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mahomes did what Mahomes does. I mean, he made a couple of unbelievable plays. He was on a bad ankle. He ran 15 yards for a touchdown to open the game up. They converted a couple of fourth downs to stay on the field. They had a key third down conversion in the fourth quarter that allowed them to hang on to the ball. But Houston did. Now they played. Houston played with Tank Dell. Now obviously he's not there anymore. Yeah. But I give them a fighter's chance in the game, just because I think they feel like they can go in. They went into Kansas City. They handled the atmosphere. They handled the talent. Kansas City was fully loaded that day with Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy, and everybody was saying made the move of Joe Tooney, a left guard to left tackle. They had already made that switch, and I thought that the thing is that they just couldn't get him into enough really passing situations like they did the Chargers, where you can let Will Anderson and Daniil Hunter and Danico Autry and some of those guys really go hunt. That's going to be the key. If they can affect Patrick Mahomes like they did in any way, like they did Justin Herbert last week, which they're not going to get Mahomes to throw four interceptions, but maybe they can get him to throw one and get the ball out of his hands and make it a game.
All right, Commanders and Lions, 8 o'clock on Saturday. The Commanders are the biggest underdog of the weekend. I think Jaden Daniels is the real deal. I'm blown away watching that guy play, and he certainly plays certainly above his age level, right? Just a year into the league here. But what do you think? Do the Commanders have any shot? And the Lions have been a Super Bowl pick for a lot of people all season long. I know they're dealing with some injuries, but does Detroit handle their business on Saturday night?
Well, I think they handle their business. I mean, it's the best offense in football, and they can score from anywhere on the field with the speed of Jameson Williams and Jahmyr Gibbs. So their offense is, you can pretty much guarantee they're going to put up 30 to start with. It could be more, like they did this year a number of times, 40 and even in the 50. I don't think they're going to do that. But really the question is, can Jaden Daniels, who's unflappable and just the best talent we've seen come into this league in a long time, but can he keep them in the game with the way that he plays, whether it's extending drives, his runs, his throws off scramble drills? I mean, it's just, you know, to get De'Ami Brown, his best game ever as a pro last week, got him involved, Zach Ertz involved. Like, he's getting everybody involved because they can't really run the ball very well right now outside of Jaden Daniels. So it's the Jaden Daniels show. And that kid, I feel like, could do anything. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like he can keep them in the game. If they can keep it a one-score game, or maybe within 10 going into the fourth quarter, that guy's got magic dust in his shoes. I feel like there's something he can still do.
Yeah, he does. And they had a wild win over Tampa last weekend. Before we get into this Eagles and Rams game, I got to ask you about the Vikings, who just completely laid an egg. Sam Darnold, they're saying he cost himself a bunch of money after the great season that he had. He had a couple of clunkers in the last two. Were you shocked at how poor the Vikings looked in their playoff game?
Yep, I was. The team won 14 games.
Yeah.
And Sam Darnold threw 35 touchdowns. He had five clunkers along the way, including the final two games. And that's, you can't describe it any other way. I mean, they were bad games on his part, but they were bad on the offense line. They were horrendous. You know, to see the Rams and those young bucks that they've drafted in the last couple of years go get 9 sacks, 12 quarterback hits, force a fumble. Like, they were all over Sam Darnold. They destroyed that offensive line. So I thought it was a horrible performance all the way around by Minnesota. But I think the quarterback probably cost himself a lot of money. And I would say that Minnesota at one point this year were definitely going to offer him a contract and extend him. Now they may say, you know, go test the market and let us give us a chance to go match the offer. But I don't think the offer is going to be anything like they might have been when they were 14-2.
So the Rams might have played the best game out of most of these teams here, right, in the opening round. And they get the Eagles, who I thought had a pretty uneven performance. I know you're close to that team, Baldy. Do the Rams have a chance to go in there in the cold and get a win?
Well, they played back in week 12. And, you know, I mean, Saquon had 300 yards of offense. They had 550 yards that day. They scored 37 points. I don't think they're going to be that explosive, but I mean, the Eagles had no problem bouncing those defensive linemen all over the place. They put the middle linebacker on his back no less than 5 times. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just dominated the game up front. It's a bad matchup for the Rams. But they played inspired football. If you can't get to Matt Stafford, the guy still has a golden arm. He's got elite receivers. I believe that Sean McVay will have a different style of game plan than he had back in week 12. And so they're an inspired team. They went on the road to Arizona and played inspired football, probably the best all-around game they played all year. So I expect that you're going to get the very best of the Rams, but the Eagles are just better in the trenches than the Rams are, and I think that's going to be the difference in the game.
All right, Baldy, and I'll let you go on this one here. The main course, Bills and Ravens, 6:30 Sunday. This game has so much hype around it. There's so many interesting, you know, storylines going into this one. I have a very tough time picking this game. I know seemingly the public does as well, because the spread keeps shifting between Baltimore minus a point, you know, Buffalo minus a point. I don't know where you come out on this one, Baldy. Who's got the upper hand here?
Well, just think about this. I mean, the Ravens just ran the Steelers, you know, right out of the gym, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Steelers have played them 3 times in 8 weeks. And they had no idea how to stop Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, or the combination thereof. And the Bills had the same issue back in week four. I mean, they just don't really know at the mesh point who's carrying it and how you're going to stop it. And if you let either one of those guys get vertical, north, south, you're going to have a long, hard day. If you can flatten them to the sideline and use the speed of Matt Milano and the speed that Buffalo has on defense, you have a fighting chance. Buffalo's offensive line is terrific. The Ravens' defensive front, led by their pass rush specialist coach Chuck Smith, is elite. Whether it's Matabike, whether it's Owe, Van Noy, they're very, very good. And Josh Allen has all the escapability in the world. I think the bettors got it right. I mean, I think it's a one-point, you know, flip one way or the other right now. But I feel like the Ravens are just playing better all-around football, and they have a more difficult offense to stop than the Bills do right now.
Well, one thing we know, there'll be a lot of people tuning in to watch that game. It'll be nice to see the numbers that thing gets a few days afterwards, right? Baldy, thank you for the time as always. Appreciate it, and look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah, Danny, Omar, all the best, man. Enjoy the games. Talk to you.
All right, that was Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger. He's the host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day, be delicious.
The news going into the weekend, Leroy, the Dolphins fired a couple of coaches. They fired special teams coordinator Danny Crossman, who had been here a long time.
We knew that was coming.
I mean, but the Dolphins let go of Wes Welker as wide receiver coach. And that one kind of stunned me. Is that a what thing?
Tyreek thing or?
I don't know. But he's been with him since San Francisco. I was like, whoa, that's your boy, too. Hey, let me tell you something. When I've seen Leroy at top hobnobbing, Leroy was hobnobbing with Wes Welker. Left me in the dust.
Do you think he let Tyreek get away with so much that Mike McDaniel felt like, I can't have you in a authority position?
That was my thought on it. I thought that, all right, was he not reporting how many times Tyreek Hill was late and it made him look stupid or something like that? Like, that's the only thing I can think of. Like, what could you do? What could because certainly you could sit here on its face and just be like, hey, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, highest paid guys on the team, neither had 1,000 yards. Blame the wide receiver coach. But, like, isn't his job to, I mean, he needs, what does he need to do to develop those guys? Like, you know, that didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. So, yeah, I agree with you, Marcos. The only thing that seems to make sense to me was Wes Welker too lenient in the room?
Yeah. Too much of a player's coach, huh? That sucks, though, because I feel like scapegoat.
I feel like a scapegoat, too.
Messed up.
That's your guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, Leroy.
Is that another thing, too, of like, hey, that's my guy. I got rid of him. That's how dedicated I am. Please don't fire me.
Streets need a body.
But, like, so let me get this straight, though. Wes Welker was the coach the last 3 years. Two of those years, wide receivers were incredible.
Yeah.
Now his coaching got that much worse?
1 year. It's rough.
I don't know.
Scapegoat.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think, I don't know. I think sometimes players get in the comfort zone. And in order to change that and change the process in which they go about things, you change the coach to kind of get a new focus and a new attitude in there. So I don't know. Maybe it was these guys got a little bit too comfortable and they weren't doing their job.
Maybe.
And there's a lot of coaches that make assumptions that you're a professional, you've been a professional a long time, you know how to go about this. And that might not, when Tyreek says, I didn't get enough work, right? Does that not fall on the coach?
Does that fall on the position coach?
I don't know.
Why would that fall on him?
I don't know. I'm just
like you're thinking,
guessing. I don't know why coaches get fired, dude.
That's why. Well, I just tended to like. We all saw the. We're like, oh, special teams obviously getting fired. But like, this guy's been here for years. He came with Mike McDaniel from San Francisco.
Right.
They're obviously tight. I feel like when I you know, used to go to practices, I see Mike McDaniel hobnobbing with Wes Welker all the time. Now, maybe Wes Welker likes to hobnob because I saw it with Leroy too. But you know, from my standpoint, I'm just like, wait, what? What do you mean Wes Welker got canned? I didn't understand. Like, that to me, it just felt like he either kept secrets to make that kept Mike McDaniel looking a little foolish. Maybe he was trying to keep the stress off of his plate. I don't know. But just, you can't go out here and tell me performance. Like, we're going to blame 230 million receivers. We're going to blame their performances on the coach? Really? Like, Malik Washington got better, did he not?
Right. Well, again, we could probably do this throughout coaching, right? But we picked to do this here in this situation. I don't know why coaches get fired, right? I mean, we just had the thought process of, can't imagine how coach got fired in their first year.
Yeah.
On a team that sucked. And you knew they were going to suck. And why are you firing the coach?
Schmeathen says, what if Welker pounded the table for OBJ?
Okay.
Woo. Marco's got a job for him then. We can pound the table together.
Oh, man.
Schmeathen also brought up another good point.
What's that?
You got to replace nostalgia with nostalgia. So, Brian Hartline, new receivers coach?
Mm-hmm. No, he's mm-hmm. coaching in a championship game.
Well, you know, take a little.
Hartline is the wide receiver coach in Ohio State. Yeah.
Time to step up to the
That's a much softer landing, by the way.
Mm. I feel like Hartline's sticking around there because he knows the next Michigan loss. Even if Ryan Day wins the national championship, once he loses to Michigan again, he's fired.
I already asked my biggest Ohio State supporter.
And what did he say?
He says
he's Teflon.
He says no, he was going to be there regardless. I'm like, that's not what I was hearing after the Michigan game. No.
I'm telling you, if he wins the national championship and he loses to Michigan again, his seat's going to get hot. They're tired of losing to Michigan.
Yeah, but the goal is to win a championship.
So they fired Orgeron.
I mean, hold on. All right.
I don't care that he was too horny.
He was very horny, too. And irresponsible, too. Yeah, baby, you can come by practice.
We're going to do this to the Oklahoma drill, and then, you know, we'll go to the room and we'll talk around.
Take a break. Back after this.
Bum, 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 bum.
Leroy, it is time to gather us around the locker room and hand out your weekend game balls and game bumps. Bum. What do you got, dude?
Well, I'm going to go to, for my game bums, I'm going to pull a tour and I'm going to put it all on two quarterbacks that, whew. Woo, stunk it up. Bo Nix, Justin Herbert, joint game bum, weren't very good. Made it so that the other team didn't have to do a whole lot because you kept throwing the ball to him.
Also had a blocked extra point.
Blocked extra point. My game ball, I got to tell you, man, this Jaden Daniel. He is something special.
I know.
He is.
He's good.
He is. He looked good.
He's good.
Now, I would say I always wonder these questions. If I had taken Jaden Daniel first and put Caleb Williams in that situation? Would it look similar? And being that we would be saying the same thing about Caleb Williams, because you don't go from being the next it guy to that, right? There's got to be some extenuating circumstances.
Unless you listen to Belichick. Belichick told you from jump. He says he was not a Caleb Williams believer.
But one of the things that'll kill you with Belichick, carelessness with the football. That right there, that's a no-go.
Mm.
Any quarterback that, right, that's a big no. He says, look, three downs and punt is much better than what you're doing for us, son. But, yeah, good football. I just couldn't. It's one of those games where you couldn't stop watching because you didn't know what this dude was going to do, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'll tell you the one thing I can't stop watching, and that's Derrick Henry run over Minkah Fitzpatrick. I can't stop watching it. Wow.
Just, I don't know if you know this about Derrick Henry, but he's big.
Big.
Dude.
Wow.
Fast.
I mean.
It's a giant.
That's actually.
You don't usually see teams run the ball like that against Pittsburgh. You don't.
A lot of people saying Pittsburgh quit. They quit on Tomlin.
Yeah, that's what you're getting at with when you
that's
get
what people are saying.
It.
I'm not saying it. I'm just saying people are saying it.
Dude, listen. They're going to put up his numbers, and they're going to put up, is it time to move on? He ain't won a playoff game in X amount of years.
His last right? postseason win is in 2016. Six straight losses for Tomlin.
And I would say this to you. He's been there 17 years. Never had a losing record. And you are willing to move on from him. You get what you get.
How many 9-8s in there, though? Because 9-8s, I don't believe in that as a winning record.
I don't think any.
Nah, he's had that. He's definitely had 9-8s in there.
Yeah.
They just started the 17-game schedule.
2021 was the first year, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
That being said, did you hear what Jimmy Johnson said?
That they'd be idiots for getting rid of Mike Tomlin?
No. Actually, he didn't say that.
Really?
He said it's getting stale there in Pittsburgh, and he suggests a coaching swap.
Mm.
He said the Cowboys and Steelers should swap coaches. McCarthy to Pittsburgh. He's a Pittsburgh guy, apparently. And Tomlin to Dallas.
Mm.
A whole switcheroo, according to Jimmy Johnson.
Are they going to let Mike Tomlin be Mike Tomlin?
I don't know.
You know what I mean. With Jerry Jones.
I think so.
That wouldn't be bad. A little more creative on the offensive side.
Probably quite a bit of these 9-8s.
Really?
9-8 in 2022. 9-7-1 in 2021.
8 ties.
8-8 in 2019. 9-6-1 in 2018.
So he's got a handful in there.
8-8 in 2012, 8-8 2013.
Look, I mean, he's also been trying to make Kenny Pickett and Russell Wilson work.
That's true.
You know, like, I don't know, when does the time come? See, that's the thing with Pittsburgh, right? They're almost kind of like the Heat. They never tank. Yeah. Like, with a guy like Tomlin's cachet, when's the time that they would ever pull the plug on a season, or could they ever pull the plug on a season to go get themselves a young quarterback? Because they haven't had anybody since Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
Coach swap. Wow.
You kind of like Coach Swap.
I'm thinking. Little attitude change for both teams?
Well, I think if you do a coach swap, it has to happen within, like, hours, because I think I think McCarthy's window to negotiate opens 14th. Soon. It says, this is Schefter. With the Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy eligible to talk to other teams after midnight Tuesday, there haven't been any negotiations on a new deal with Dallas per sources. It's now looking like McCarthy will indeed become a coaching free agent, with Chicago and New Orleans expected to be interested in speaking with him.
You know what? That's a shame. Right? Why wouldn't they let, if they're not going to keep him, why wouldn't they let him go talk to Chicago?
Weird.
It's a weird.
Yeah, they denied the request.
Right. And Chicago's waiting, so what's a couple of days, right?
No. I don't know. That's like, a strange
one. That's a crazy that was a crazy thing because it would give the impression that they want to re-sign him. And then you hear there's been no traction whatsoever. So I'm like, why wouldn't you just let him go interview?
Decisions.
Or could it be something along the lines of if he got an offer, then anybody who's going to get him away from the Cowboys is going to pay a nice penny, right? And if that was out there, maybe they would end up paying more than they wanted to. So you don't let him talk and start, you know, negotiating and then come back to you with those negotiations from other teams.
A lot of coaching drama, dude.
But, well, and to be fair to all these coaches, all the teams that have this coaching drama also have roster drama, right? In that they have some glaring issues that need to be fixed on their roster, and to think that you can fix it and continue to be the same way with a new coach is being unfair to that new coach. Just look at Antonio Pierce and look at Jerry Mayo, right? Two guys who had no chance based on what their roster was.
According to Mary Kay Cabot, your former beat reporter,
mm-hmm.
Daryl Bevel, Dolphins QB coach, is interviewing with them for their offensive coordinator position, the Cleveland Browns.
With who?
The Browns.
Oh, okay.
With Daryl Bevel.
Well, he's a
listen. If I'm Daryl Bevel, I mean, get the experience too. But how could you want that QB situation unless you know you're getting Cam Ward?
Again, that's the other thing, right?
Did you see the stuff that they may try and void his contract, Deshaun, because he wasn't wearing his boot?
I did. Yeah, he was like on TikTok
he was dancing on TikTok, but he didn't have his walking boot on, and apparently he was only like a certain amount of time out from his surgery. I suppose he could lie and say it was an old video. I don't know.
Yeah. But
I think it happened down here, too, his re-injury.
Oh, what a shocker. TikTok. In Miami.
TikTok.
What an age.
I mean, listen. Not for anything. I'd kick the tires on just about anything to get from under that. Right?
It's like, yeah. There's definitely a meeting every week in Browns headquarters that's just called Deshaun Watson loopholes. All right, guys.
I mean, we find anything? Technically, it's not a loophole. If you get injured doing something you shouldn't be doing, your contract can be voided.
Oof. Crazy.
And that's not stuff like playing basketball in the off season or, you know, doing other things and trying to stay in shape, right? We're not talking about that. But if you just had surgery and we see you out there flailing without doing taking the proper steps towards your recovery, then a team could have some questions.
They got like a spy in Cancun on Deshaun Watson, be like, you were parasailing.
Put it on TikTok!
We saw you, dude. No boot.
Wow. So did they say how he?
I think he didn't hurt it on TikTok. Like they said, like he re-aggravated the injury while rehabbing, I think, in Miami. But the thing that everybody was pointing to, so that's not what's going to get avoided. But apparently, the protocols are he's supposed to still be in a walking boot because he's not that far out of surgery.
Right.
And apparently he was seen not in it. Now, I don't know what doctors said. Maybe doctors told him he doesn't need the boot anymore. I don't know. You know, right. Maybe he's a science beater like Jalen Phillips.
Clearly not. He needed another surgery.
Oof.
So that nixed that, right?
Wow. That's something. So you were telling me during the break, Froggy, you said that Minkah Fitzpatrick used to be, he was teammates with Derrick Henry. Yeah. So they're friends. He's not my friend anymore.
No. After that,
he's not my friend anymore. Stiff arm
like that? No way.
I got to tell you.
Have you ever?
Anytime I played against my friends,
yeah,
I wanted to bury them.
Who's your
just so when we Huh?
Do you have the best relationship of a person you stiff-armed in a game?
So, we played against Kansas City 1 year. And Lonnie Martz was, we played high school football together. And every year we would go down and we'd talk about, oh, you and Lonnie go play against each other. Because he was kind of like a cover guy. So I knew when we played them, he was going to cover me the whole game. And I shook him and he fell. And I went for 71. The next time he tackled me, I said, well, I cannot wait until we get back home.
Did he avoid you or did he take it like a man?
No, I haven't seen him. I've talked to him. It is not like we
laugh. Safe to say he didn't go to the reunion?
No. He lives in Tampa now. So. But yeah, so stuff like that. I remember playing against my the other running back who I got. Believe it or not, I started playing football again. Like I played, I went to a different school freshman year, right? And then I transferred, so I had to sit out my 10th grade year too. They don't have you can play right away. So we were sitting around lunch and one of the running backs, he was like the star running back. We used to play against each other in Little League. So we were like arch rival parks, right? His park is my park. Everybody would go see the game because we were the two players. And I said, we were going back and forth. And I said, calm down. If I was playing, you wouldn't be playing. And so we put a little wager on it. And so the next year I went and played football. And we played together. So it was hard to say who won the bet. He ended up going to Oregon State and playing for Buffalo. So when we ran into each other, Buffalo, at that time, he was a safety. So, yeah.
We'll take a break here on the show, get you caught up with your headlines. Back with more after this.
Welcome back in here on QAM. Hollywood, Omar Kelly, Dan Day with you. It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline Shop. Over 2,000 Toyotas on sale. L1 location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. ToyotaofHollywood.com. Where we are joined by our friend Alan Poupart. He's the publisher of Miami Dolphins on SI. He is the host of the All Dolphins podcast. Alan, good morning. Thank you for hanging with us here on a Football Friday.
I cannot think of a better way to spend a few minutes on this beautiful Friday morning here in Orlando, where it's probably 20 degrees colder than where you guys are.
Yeah, Orlando. So what's the big plan for the son's birthday?
Oh, it's in Orlando. It's a universal weekend for the little man who's not so little anymore.
My question to you is, Alan, my daughter's turning 4, and I'm considering taking her to Disney World. Do you think 4 is too early for Disney World?
You're probably right at the cutoff, I would think. Here's the big test is, does she get excited whatsoever if you put on Snow White, Little Mermaid, or wherever on the TV at home?
No, absolutely not.
My 2-year-old goes nuts for Mickey. What are you talking about?
No, I don't think she's in Disney. Yeah, no, she's no. She doesn't.
He's just trying to weasel his way out of it because he knows it's expensive. That's all he's trying to do right now.
I hate Disney. I really do hate Disney. But anyway.
What is it? The heat? The long lines?
The long lines.
The expensiveness?
The long lines.
Yeah, there's a lot of drawbacks, but it's nice. Take your kid. It's nice.
I'll wait till
Alan,
like 5.
Let's get into some Dolphin stuff here because you do have a few articles up here, SI.com, that I found interesting here. And we talked a lot about this over the past week or so. I personally thought that the Dolphins backup quarterback, the mishandling of that situation was the most costly thing that they did, the most costly error that the Dolphins committed. You wrote about this situation with the backup quarterback. What was your takeaway on that?
My takeaway was all along I felt it was like horrible roster management. And then as we set up for Chris Greer's end-of-season press conference, I'm thinking, okay, maybe there is a good explanation here that's going to come out, and his explanation made me feel even worse about the whole situation. It was like, first of all, he kind of said, well, we won big games with Skylar Thompson. You know, he got us into the playoffs with that win against the Jets in 2022. Yeah, they went 11-6. And then in the playoff game, he mentioned that they scored 31 points. Yeah, they scored 31 points because they had three takeaways on defense, including a fumble return for a touchdown, plus a 50-yard punt return by Cedric Wilson Jr. It wasn't the offense. The offense was brutal that day. So that was part one. And then part B was, we didn't want to affect the compensatory pick formula. Really? Like, it wasn't worth squandering. Yeah. What the Dolphins thought at the time was they're going to get a third for Robert Hunt and Christian Wilkins. Now it's looking that because of his injury, Christian Wilkins might be a fourth, which is what you would have sacrificed based on the money you would have paid. Having a dependable backup quarterback was not worth a fourth-round pick, really?
No, I don't even think it was a fourth-round pick, because they would have signed a backup for about $4 million. They didn't feel like it was equivalent of losing a seventh-rounder for Deshaun Elliott, which I thought was just a ridiculous statement as well. But they did say they were runner-ups for a couple of guys. And my thought process is,
sure,
Andy Dalton, sure, and Joe Flacco. And I'm like, would those guys have made any difference?
Oh, I think so. And in some of the games. And the other part of it, too, is because it's easy for us to throw darts at Skylar and Tyler. And some of them are deserved. But they didn't get any help. I mean, it's like at a time when everybody else needed to pick up their game, it's like they did the opposite. You look at the game against the Colts, for example. I mean, there was one drive, it's like three consecutive plays has a penalty on it. I mean, it was brutal. And then Tyreek against Tennessee, where he flubs that lateral from Huntley and then doesn't react quickly enough to pick up the loose ball and it becomes a fumble. I mean, it's like, it was almost like the Dolphin players on offense were like, oh, yeah, Tua's not here. Why even bother? I mean, it was that bad.
Alan, you mentioned that press conference that Chris and Mike gave, and we certainly played a lot of it here on this show, and it did not seem to be particularly well received by the fan base. But with that being said, I guess it doesn't really matter anymore what people, you know, scream from the mountaintops here, because, you know, Stephen Ross had his mind made up the entire time, it seems like, and it didn't matter that they lost to a historically terrible team in the Jets in the last game. They were going to roll with these guys, and I guess Chris kind of say what he wants at this point, because everyone seems immune over there.
Yeah, kind of, sort of, right? But again, it's not surprising. Like, I thought, and this is a question and every media member was asking and being asked before the end of the regular season, is how safe are those guys? And to me, McDaniel wasn't even a conversation. He's back. And then with Chris Greer, my take all along was less than 50-50, and I think I dropped it down to like 25% at one point that they'll make a change. And I think Omar wrote that in one of his columns, that, you know, Stephen Ross gets comfortable with certain people. He's got people whispering in his ears. And I think more than anything else, he wants the Dolphins to be relevant. And they were very relevant through most of 2023, until it went south at the end of the season, and then it can be partly explained with injuries. And then last year, it's very easy to say, well, look, the starting quarterback missed six games, that's why we're not in the playoffs, and then maybe 2025 is another season where he escapes injuries and we're right back in the playoff picture.
In the playoffs, but can you beat any of these teams in the playoffs? And my argument would be no, but that would have been the same argument even if Tua had played six games. Here's my thing, Poupard, and this is something that I addressed in a column in the Miami Herald last week. Steve Ross is terrified to hire. And if you look at every time he's had to do it, it's been a very traumatic, horrible experience, with probably Brian Flores' lone exception. And then we see how that played out. So what would motivate Steve Ross to go out there and purge his coach and fire his GM and fire his head coach and then start fresh with a whole new organization and regime? Tell me, what is the motivation outside of fending off apathy?
Correct. No, and it's an excellent point you made, and that's a very good column you wrote. And the additional factor is the dude's, what, 84, 85 years old? I don't know that he have much of an appetite for going through that process unless basically he's backed against the wall where he has no choice, or it's going
to
be
a or there's a big fish out there to go get. Like, next year, let's say Mike Tomlin's out there, and I'm not saying that, you know, Pittsburgh's going to get rid of him, because I think Pittsburgh would be ridiculous to get rid of him. If Mike Tomlin's out there, you throw everything in the kitchen sink to try to get him. GM power, final say, $10 million a year. That would be a great motivator to go do that. But right now, when you're looking at this array of head coaches that everybody's interviewing, even Dallas's former coach, does he move you? Does he inspire you to create change?
No, the two guys who move the needle more than anybody in this coaching cycle are Deion Sanders, who comes with a – I mean, tell me I'm wrong.
He moves the needle. I don't necessarily know I could sit there and tell you that he's a good coach.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you. Trust me, you know my feelings.
Yeah, I know your feelings, yes. Whole lot of flash. Not necessarily enough substance.
Correct. And the other one is Ben Johnson, who's a former Dolphins assistant.
Oh, hold on. Wait a minute. What about Mike Vrabel? Don't disrespect Mike Vrabel.
Oh, okay. Well, but he's already gone.
If you were going to fire, like, I think New England fired Mayo to get Vrabel because he's out there. And he would have absolutely been at the top of my selection process.
Oh, absolutely. Without question. Absolutely. But then... The thing with Mike Vrabel and the Dolphins, had it come to pass, pun intended, based on the because of the style of offense the Dolphins played, that's not what Mike Vrabel is. Mike Vrabel is bite your kneecaps in your face like Dan Campbell is.
Yes.
And that's the opposite of what the Dolphins are.
Well, that's what they need to become. Let me ask you, I saw a column that you put up earlier today. And it's right in my wheelhouse because, you know, I love the finances of the NFL and you know my stance, which is that the Dolphins have been doing horrible business for about 3 years now. Just horrible business. It's run another credit card, max out daddy's credit card again. Okay, we're up against the cap again. Let's get another credit card, max it out again. And you're basically proposing to do that. With the restructuring of contracts, with the shaking down of veterans, they are right now $12 to $14 million over the cap before they even build their team. This is a position they've been in for, what, the last 2 years, where they have to begin the process over the cap, restructure deals. And I don't see an easy way to create money this offseason. Do you? Because I don't.
Well, as I indicated, there's a few guys you can restructure and or extend to create some space. Two is cap number is 39 mil.
Yeah.
That can be adjusted. And again,
but you give him a signing bonus, then you're more money in the back end of the deal, harder to cut him. Go ahead, continue.
Oh yeah, but that's what's gonna have to happen no matter what. And this is the position.
That's true.
This is the game that they've basically set themselves up to play.
Correct.
That's not stopping anytime soon until you get to the point where it's like, okay, blow it up and do
yes.
a complete rebuild.
You have to purge the roster, yes. But correct. Tua, you bring up Bradley Chubb. I'm sorry. What would motivate Bradley Chubb to restructure his deal? You even brought up Zach Sealer. I'm sorry. I'm not restructuring money. I want a new deal for twice as much as I'm being paid if I'm Zach Sealer. Like, any other conversation is not even – I'm not even listening to. So tell me, how are they going to get this money, Poupart?
Okay, hold on. If you read the article very carefully, you would know this. It's either restructure or extend. Zach Sealer's a guy right now for whom the Dolphins have an insane bargain. The amount
yes.
of money he makes for the quality of play he gives you is crazy. This is a guy you extend, and by extending him, you can lower his cap number for 2025. Bradley Chubb is in a situation where the Dolphins are going to play hardball with him, and if Bradley Chubb says, no, thank you, then the Dolphins absolutely can release him as a post-June 1 cut and chop off the numbers off the top of my head. They're not coming to me, but it's 1, 2, 3. It's 8 digits.
Yeah. I think you're – I'll look up. I think you said 19 million.
Okay. And the drawback, you can't use that money until June 1, but that's money that you will have taken off your cap. See, because Zach Seeler is in a position to tell the Dolphins, yeah, no, talk to the hand. Bradley Chubb, considering he missed the entire 2024 season after a massively serious knee injury, not quite in that same position of strength as Seeler is. And the same for Teron, who remains a very good player, but he's got, what is it, $22 million cap number. It's very high.
Alan, before we let you run here, appreciate all your time this morning and insight on the Dolphins. I just wanted to run through these games this weekend with you. I like to get everyone's picks on these if we can. We got Chiefs and Texans, 4:30 Saturday. Who do you like?
Oh, I would love for Houston to win because my case of Chiefs fatigue syndrome is acting up again, but I have a hard time seeing Houston winning that game.
Lions and Commanders, 8 o'clock Saturday.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels is an absolute complete stud, but Detroit is completely stacked. I think the Lions win pretty handily.
Eagles and Rams, 3 o'clock on Sunday.
The Rams defense is really, really good, but Philly is good on both sides. At the line of scrimmage, I think they're a little bit too much for them.
And finally, the big one, 6:30 Sunday, Bills and Ravens.
Yeah, I'm lame because I'm going all chalk here. But before the playoffs started, I said on my podcast, the team that to me struck me as the most dangerous in the AFC was Baltimore. And I don't know that I see anything changing there. Lamar and Josh Allen are both ridiculous, but I think Baltimore's a better all-around team right now.
All right, so you're leaning towards all the favorites. I'm torn on that last game, but I do agree with you on the other three. Alan, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon, all right?
Sounds like a plan. Take care, guys.
Welcome back in here on WQAM. Hollywood, Dono, Dan Day along here with you on this Tuesday morning, and it is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com, where we are joined by our friend Kyle Krabs. He is the host of the Locked on Fins podcast. Kyle, good morning. How's everything, my friend?
Everything's going all right. How you guys doing?
Good, good. We're trying to bounce back from the end of the Dolphins season and trying to look ahead here. And we're bringing you on because Dono and I don't have answers, Kyle. We're getting a lot of questions and we just don't have answers. Obviously, everything is staying the way that it was, right? Mike McDaniel will be back. Chris Greer will be back. But a couple people had to take the fall. And Wes Welker was one of those. We had Joe on yesterday. He was obviously not particularly thrilled that Wes was let go. What were your thoughts on the moves that the Dolphins made?
Well, as far as Wes, it sure seems like there was some decision that was made that the direction of that room needs to be different. And, you know, whether I don't think the decision to move on from Wes has to mean that the Dolphins aren't making any personnel moves in that room, which I think there's a need for some diversification of skill sets within that room. And you obviously have a $30-plus million a year elephant in the room that needs to get figured out between now and the start of the league year as well. So I'm going to be patient to see what else happens and what are the shoes fall there at wide receiver. But the Danny Crossman move was probably 2 years overdue. I'm glad that they finally decided that was a change that needed to be made. Because you watch a lot of these playoff games, and it wasn't necessarily a hyper-competitive wild card round, but a lot of these games and close games between good teams are won in the margins. And you can count on one hand the number of positive contributions the Dolphins have had from special teams outside of Jason Sanders kicking long field goals in the entirety of the Mike McDaniel era.
How uncertain, Kyle, is Tyreek Hill's future in Miami? Do you expect him back? And any other possible, you know, big-time exits you might expect between now and next season?
Yeah, I did a show last week on Locked on Dolphins, and it was about four big contracts that this team needs to kind of decide what direction they want to go on. And Tyreek Hill's on that list. Bradley Chubb. If you asked me 2 months ago, I would assume, you know, it would probably be just an assumption that was going to be a post-June 1st cut. But if you make that decision with Tyreek Hill and then you make Teron Armstead decides to retire hypothetically, I mean, you're looking at a number of big departures, and you have to fill those holes. And for Bradley Chubb, who you just paid to get healthy, maybe you see that investment through and don't make an extra need for yourself if you're going to bank on Chubb, Phillips, Chop Robinson. Those guys all should be healthy for the start of the year. You got Muhammad Kamara as a young guy, and then maybe you just need like a middle-tier free agent. You feel like that room's done instead of opening up a primary need. But as far as Tyreek, like, it's impossible to say what the temperature's at. I personally would probably go a different direction, and I would rather move on a year too early than a year too late with a situation like that, with how kind of ugly that got at the end of the year. And I think there's some context clues with the way that they structured his renegotiated contract. I think that is an important distinguishment to make. They didn't extend him in August. They reallocated some of the money, moved some money around, and they gave him guarantees for 2025. But he's due a big bonus that usually gets paid out in March, and it's not due until the last day of August. So the reason you would do something like that is if you're anticipating, and this goes back to when they agreed to this adjusted contract, you don't have to write a check to somebody who ultimately might not play on your team and pay his salary for somebody else. So there's an extended window before they have any finances that are due to Tyreek that I think kind of gives some context clues that maybe they felt 2024 could have been the last year with Tyreek no matter what.
Wow, that's interesting. Kyle, do you believe he'll be back next year? Like, if you were betting today, do you believe he'll be back next year?
I would bet no.
Wow.
You know, that's a hard, and they could say all the right things, but you packed it in at halftime on a game that because you looked up and saw the score on somebody else, and it really stuck out to me. I think it was Calais Campbell, right? For all the things that Calais Campbell, an outstanding career, he acknowledged they saw the score and said, we're playing for the love of the game at that point. And I think it speaks magnitude on who was playing hard in the second half of that game, who wasn't playing hard in the second half game, and who decided not to play in the second half of that game.
Yeah, I mean, that's disappointing because, look, there were teams that were knocked out of that thing, you know, a month ago, right? And they still had guys that, you know, veteran players that were going out and playing. And, you know, for them to – by the way, the Jets, I mean, talk about the Jets, how long were they eliminated for? And they still – went out there and played hard in that game. But, Kyle, yeah, very disappointing. I guess the follow-up to the Tyreek Hill thing would be, where do you go from there? Because I think without Tyreek Hill, doesn't that start to show some of Tua's limitations a little bit more? I mean, clearly he was able to lean on Tyreek when things were going well. I know the last season was kind of a mess, but where do you go from here to help your quarterback out who does have, you know, limitations?
I think you have to get serious about what Mike McDaniel's background is as the run game coordinator. And that for me is, I think, the identity crisis that kind of came to a head this season where your tight end, you've improved the tight end room, but you improved the tight end room with a pass-catching tight end. And nobody's going to confuse Jonnu for George Kittle as an inline player. And that's not to say Jonnu didn't have an amazing season, because he did, but the skill sets are just different. And you think about Mike and his background as a run game coordinator, and they want to run the ball, but the guys that are charged with blocking on the edge are a lot of wide receivers who are smaller body types, and then you have these flex tight ends who, it's not the strength of their game. So if you're not going to have two premium wide receivers, and I think Mike falls into this trap at times as a play caller, well, we want to get the ball into our best players' hands, so let's call more pass plays because our best players are pass catchers. I would love to see this team get a little bit more run-focused, which is kind of the original intent, and be a little bit less West Coast-y, true drop-back, quick game passing, and, you know, invest in your offensive line to run the ball. And I'm sure that's a talking point that you guys had on the docket to talk about. But if you're not going to have two marquee pass catchers, then get back to the basics of the way the offense is supposed to be run and invest in the rest of your groups that are going to allow you to run the ball. And then you can play off of that, which is the entire way the passing game is designed to be run, going back to the origins of it with Kyle Shanahan.
Were you surprised that Stephen Ross retained Chris Greer?
a little bit, because I would have expected there would have been some level of significant organizational change with a season like this and the way that it played out. I think Steve is patient and has more patience than the fans certainly do. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. And as you look for, if you were to look for optimism with a decision like this, you can point to a number of personnel moves that this team made with Jordan Brooks and Jonnu Smith and Aaron Brewer at the center position. They did push some right buttons, and their draft class looks to have a number of significant contributors with Chop Robinson, who had an amazing second half of his rookie season, and Malik Washington, who came on strong in the final 6 weeks of the year. And Patrick Paul, when he plays left tackle, which is his original position, and not right tackle, which is where he had to play against the Jets and in a couple other small spurts this season, pretty promising. So there are a number of buttons that were pushed correctly and from personnel, and you have significantly less in the way of outgoing talent this year than you did last year. And you have a higher floor in which to start as far as from a salary cap perspective. They were $30 million in the red last year to start and had to restructure and work their way out versus being much closer to break even this year and having, I think they're in the top 10 as far as restructure potential in the NFL. So they're going to have the ability to restructure and do whatever they theoretically want to do. So I think having known predictable from a you know what kind of moves you're going to make standpoint, it helps to kind of know that and get a feel for what they may try to achieve this offseason, and then you evaluate it and see if it works. And then if it doesn't, you're probably talking about everybody being out after 2025.
Kyle Crabbs here with us on QAM. He's the host of the Locked On Dolphins podcast. And Kyle, I think it's funny, we get a text in here that says you guys are being way too negative. How can you put a positive spin on what is going on in Miami Gardens right now? What would be the Dolphins sales pitch to people as to how they could possibly turn this thing into the Super Bowl contender that they kind of promised, right? Isn't that the ultimate goal, right? It's not just to get into the sneak into the playoffs or, you know, to win a wild card game. The goal is to be a contender. So what is the positive spin that they are going to put on this thing in Miami Gardens to say, hey, you know, this is why we're going to be able to contend?
Well, here's what I would say. If you wanted to put your optimist hat on, I think they had a stretch of time when Mike first got there where they kind of lost the plot as far as what they intended to be. They talked about building a sustainable winner and building through the draft, and then they traded all their draft picks for a couple of big contracts. Oh, you're past that now, and you've made some hard financial decisions, and this is a team that's looking at potentially having their own one, their own two. They're going to have a comp three for Rob Hunt. They're going to have a comp four for Christian Wilkins and their own four. They're going to have two fives as scheduled right now. And then if you decide to move on from Tyreek Hill, you could add that draft capital potentially to the pool. You can get a large influx in young talent. And if you're never going to bat 1,000, and I don't want anybody to have that expectation about the draft, but you look at the draft that just came in and what those contributions look like. You have a known commodity at quarterback that is continuing to mature, and if he does the things that he needs to do to mitigate the durability questions that exist with him, and you better prepare yourself with the backup quarterback situation behind it with somebody who is at least competent, which they did not have until, the Snoop Huntley-Cleveland game is the only competent backup quarterback play we saw all season from Miami. I do think you're in a position where you can be winning enough games to contend for a division championship. You still have to solve the riddle of Western New York, and you know, that's a whole other story. But you're going to be in position to get tickets to the dance and then let the chips fall where they may. And if you're going to move on from some older talent, hopefully your team is healthier at the end of the year, which has been the biggest issue this team has had in each of the 3 years.
Let's take a detour from the Dolphins for a second, because Kyle Crabbs is with us. He not only hosts Locked On Dolphins, but also Locked On NFL Scouting. And Kyle, I need some material for Locked On Canes. So I would love your scouting report on Carson Beck, who was, you know, briefly declared for the NFL draft. He opts out of the draft. He's coming to the Miami Hurricanes. So what should Miami fans know? Because I appreciate your scouting report so much. What should Miami Hurricanes fans expect from Carson Beck?
He's got better tools than I think a lot of people assume. As far as, I think he's got a good arm. I think he's a good athlete. He can get off his spot. But he's somebody who really struggled this past year without, he had Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers in 2023 as like the premier safety blankets that he had in the passing game. And he had great rapport with those guys. He had great chemistry with those guys. And there'd be tight window throws that he'd make and trust those guys to make adjustments at the catch point, and they would do it. And then those guys leave, and the pass-catching group, you could tell it just wasn't the same as far as there's not a lot of guys that are creating separation, so he has to try tight window throws, and the guys aren't adjusting at the catch point, so the production's down, and then they're getting behind the sticks more often, and teams are able to confuse him. You can really confuse him with simulated pressures, with rushing four, but keeping him in the pocket and forcing him to, you know, if you can attack the protection scheme, he'll make bad decisions with the ball. So for a team like Miami that has the Cristobal special with all these powerhouses on the offensive line, and they have the ability to run the ball, I think it makes it a very dangerous combination, provided he gets the right kind of chemistry with one or two of the guys that are catching the football from him.
Kyle, before we let you run here, I just want to get your take on the games coming up here this weekend. Do any of these upsets happen here? The first three games, you got pretty large spreads here. You got the Eagles and the Rams, the Lions and the Commanders, the Chiefs and the Texans. I'll get to that last game in just a moment with you. But do any of those teams have a chance to pull the upset?
I would not dismiss the Rams. They got the quarterback that's kind of been there, done that. Philly has shown to be shaky ground as far as passing offense. I think with Stafford, that can be an offense that travels well. They're another team off the Shanahan tree that's got big physical tight ends and wide receivers, and that helps them run the ball. So there's your sign, Dolphins fans. But that is the one that I look at, and I'd probably be most appealed to pick the upset on is the Rams traveling to Philadelphia, just because they've kind of, I know they got a young nucleus of team, but their key figures have been there, done that before, and Philly's kind of struggling to stay balanced on offense.
All right, I like that pick. And then, Kyle, at 6:30 on Sunday, CBS can have quite a few viewers for Bills and Ravens from Buffalo. That should be one heck of a game. It's a pick'em game at the moment. Do you lean any way on this one here?
Over on the points, for starters. That's first place I lean. The thing that worries me about Buffalo is they are a nickel-based defense. And playing a team like Baltimore, who can put a 270-pound tight end and then another 250-pound tight end and a 300-pound fullback out there, it really gets you out of your identity. And then Derrick Henry with Lamar, and Lamar's dialed in right now, that would be my worry for Buffalo. And they have shown that they are willing to let you work your way down the field running the ball without giving up the explosive plays. But then when they played the first time this year, that was the first thing that happened, was Baltimore hit a couple explosive runs. So I am not surprised it's a toss-up game. I think you could play it 10 times and each team would win 5 times. Hmm. So it's going to be really fascinating. I think the early first couple of possessions for each team is going to be really defining for the way that game plays out, I think.
Well, it should be a heck of a game. Kyle, thank you for the time. We'll check in with you again next week, and we'll have the conference championship games all set, and we'll get your take on those. But for now, thank you for the time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. It was good catching up with you.
We're going to do Cat Talk now. Aronde Gadsden is going to join us in this segment. I want to talk to him about Mike McDaniel, and because we got your take last week, Crowder, about Mike McDaniel. We kind of dove into it a little bit with Zach Elb, and you know, whether Mike McCarthy, Mike McDaniel, And he was kind of taking the same approach we did, which was, bro, the guy has a Super Bowl. He's won playoff games, 3 12-win seasons in a row. He lost Dak this year. Like, is it really his fault? But yesterday, Josh Chappelle brought up something interesting regarding Mike McCarthy, where he was kind of saying, like, okay, yes, he has accomplished all that. There's no doubt. But can you also make the case that the NFL has kind of passed him by? Like, the success has passed him by. But I wonder, when it comes to the discussion about can Mike McDaniel command a locker room, that seems to be, like, the biggest hit on McDaniel right now. And I don't think those questions are being asked about Mike McCarthy. And, like, I think, you know, when it comes to somebody like you who was in an NFL locker room and you dealt with the Cam Camerons and Aronde Gadsden, I want to get his take. Like, at a certain point, you're going to go through a season like the Dolphins did this year where you're 2-6. Do you need that, like, stable presence in the locker room to be able to keep your guys focused? Because when things are going great, they're great. But when they're not going great, you kind of look at a Mike McCarthy and you say, okay, but at least he can keep calm and composure in the locker room. And I guess now we have questions whether or not McDaniel can command that same respect.
And with McCarthy, it's crazy. 4 years, 3 of the 4 were 12-win seasons. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's won a Super Bowl back in Green Bay. Like, I think his resume, to your point, has it passed him by? I don't think so. But his resume shows it even in the last 4 years. But the thing, even with Cam Cameron, like, the respect for Cam Cameron was lost, but Dom Capers was our DC. And Dom Capers was the one that we looked to have that voice, you know, that, I won't say calming voice, but just the masculine locker room head coach leader voice. For us, I missed yesterday because we interviewed Nick Saban.
Yeah.
And, like, even him interviewing, like, you're sitting there listening to him talk, and he's not physically demanding. Nick Saban is 5'4". Nick Saban's not a big human being. But as he talks and as, like, his demeanor and how he sits there, you're like, this is a leader. Like, he understands the assignment, as y'all young kids say. Stuff like that, like, that has to be there. I don't know if Mike McDaniels has that. And to your point of us, you know, talking this out, because I was questioning Chris Greer, because I think the biggest problem this year that we saw on the field on Sundays was the backup quarterback. Who in the hell made the decision to make Skylar Thompson your 3-year answer if Tua gets hurt? Like, I think that was crazy. But then we get to talking through it and get to talking through things, and Hawk calls it the big three. Tua, Greer,
it's still ridiculous. I hate that he does that, but yeah, he does.
It's crazy to call it the big three, but, you know, we've had a big three in Miami. I was very successful. So, but to be that and to say the three most important positions on a football team, three most important positions in an organization is the head coach, the GM, and the quarterback. The weakest link of those three, if you really break it down and see, we went through Chris Greer's misses, but also his hits. We've gone through Tua, where Tua is a Pro Bowl quarterback when he's healthy, and we know the injury, but hell, what's the boy, Joe Burrow's, his ass is injured a lot too. Like, you see guys that can, if they're on the field, they're playing ball. If you have to pick the weakest link out of those three, it's Mike McDaniel. And I'm not saying he's a bad head coach, but if we're going, I need to make a move, one of these three, and he just got the big contract extension. We all know what, you know, what's going on business-wise, but Tua, Greer, or McDaniel, if one of them have to go, if they're on an island, what's it called, Survivor?
Yeah.
I think they'd look around and put Mike on the little canoe and push him out into the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, the more we're talking this out, and we're using Mike McCarthy kind of just like as a meat shield right now to get into the conversation, he's not coming to Miami, so it doesn't really matter.
No. And I don't really want Mike McCarthy. Me neither. Honestly, I wouldn't want Mike McCarthy. If we had written McDaniel, I don't want Mike McCarthy to be interviewed.
Me neither. Yeah, yeah. But the more we talk this out, it's funny because you know how I feel about Chris Greer. Like, I thought they should have moved on from Greer, but there's definitely something to, okay, fine, if you were going to keep McDaniel because you just extended him, right? Like, you're going to keep McDaniel this year because you gave him the money, 2 straight playoff seasons, and then this year you lose Tua. Like, if you're doing that thing, then why not just run it back, quote unquote, with the big three. I hate saying that. Why not run it back? Because if it fails this upcoming year, then you know, like, you kind of have to clean house, I think. And I know with Tua's contract, it's difficult because of the first 2 years. Like, I realize all that stuff, but you brought in Mike McDaniel to help your quarterback, and it worked. He was healthy all of last year. He was great, led the league in passing, all that stuff. If you're thinking about moving on from Mike McDaniel, you give it one more year, then you keep the guy who brought in McDaniel, and you're not playing this carousel like how we used to play in Miami, where we all felt it was just unstable, where you were firing a head coach, you had the GM, but then you fired the GM, and then you kept the head coach. Like, you don't want that. You want all the pillars to kind of align. The more, like, we're talking it out, I get it. I understand why they're doing one more year of this. As much as I may not like it, there is an argument to be had where, like, you want that structure rather than you fire Greer this year, and if next year Mike McDaniel and Tua are good but they're not great, does the GM in play say, well, I don't want them here anyways because they weren't my pick? And then you're kind of back to this carousel of you're going through the entire process again. Yeah. And that's not a good place to be. You brought up Skylar Thompson, by the way, Crowder. Did you see the news about Skylar Thompson?
Oh, he's bad?
Well, yeah, that's not
somebody
news.
Somebody figured that out. Pro Football Focus. Did Pro Football Focus do a breakdown?
Well, maybe you're going to change your tune on Skylar Thompson because your boy, Mike Tomlin, has signed him to the Steelers. He is signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, Lord. Mike Tomlin's just a nice guy. Mike's a pleasant dude, man. He's going to beat out, what's it, Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. Man, come on, Scott. Get out of here. They're just trying to they said they want a scout team guy. There's no way he plays.
Aronde Gadsden is going to join us in the next segment. Also, we are giving away a $50 gift card to Twin Peaks. We're going to get to that in a second. There was some interesting stuff with Mike Tomlin where they lost the playoff game and everybody's trying to, like, suggest that the Steelers should move on from Mike Tomlin. I wanted to get your thoughts on that too because I find it laughable. Like, I don't understand what's going on there.
Bro, I would put money into the pot if Mike Tomlin was available to be your coach. We were supposed to get him before Cam Cameron's goofy ass. Was that the Cam Cameron year when they said he's too hip-hop?
I think it was, yeah. I think so.
Come on, man. Mike Tomlin is a monster of a head coach, leader. You talking about a leader of men? Go and watch. I don't like to shamelessly plug. Go and watch. We had two Mike Tomlin interviews on the Pivot. Go watch those things. Like, Mike Tomlin, let's talk about McCarthy, the hell with McCarthy. If Mike Tomlin's available, if the Steelers fire Mike Tomlin, he will be a head coach of another team in 18 and a half minutes. just long enough to DocuSign the contract. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the craziest thing in the world. But with the Chris Greer, now you're talking about, just quickly go back to this conversation. Yeah. With the Chris Greer McDaniel conversation, because Tua's here, he just re-signed. Tua's our quarterback. Chris Greer has already admitted that he needs to address the offensive line in the backup quarterback position. Right. And those are, I would say, number one, number two weakness. He signed, we have a great receiving core. We have corners he signed. I don't think our linebackers are that damn good. By the answer that they got rid of David Long midseason, Antoine Walker, they brought in all these guys. So they have to address some stuff. But O-line and backup quarterback. Can Chris Greer address that faster than Mike McDaniel can figure out his in-game coaching, stop getting delay of game penalties, figure out how to score and play well in cold weather, get a power running game? Like, I think it's easier for Chris Greer to fix the problems than Mike McDaniel to fix his coaching. We've talked through this a lot, and I was on the, yeah, man, Greer ain't bringing him in to who? Mike McDaniel knew this damn Huntley was about to start for 2 weeks, and they came out there and scored 11 points.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's on Chris Greer that he doesn't understand that he's not Tua.
No, I think it's a double-edged sword. You're right. Chris Greer's problems are easier for him to kind of patch through than McDaniel's that seemed to be more of just his shortcomings as a head coach, and he's had 3 years to fix them, and in the third year, there hasn't been much growth in a lot of areas. But I will say, Chris Greer's biggest shortcoming would be that. He hired Brian Flores, as you would say, butt wipe. They got rid of him. His second opportunity was who? Mike McDaniel. He was in charge of that process. I'm sure Stephen Ross was in charge as well. But like Chris Greer's a general manager. You would imagine his decision weighed into them who they were going to hire. And if Mike McDaniel can't fix those issues, then it's still a negative mark on Chris Greer's resume, is it not? Like that's the head coach he brought in to fix that rebuild. So to me, it's a double-edged sword. You're right. The more we talk this out, Mike McDaniel's shortcomings seem more prevalent, and the team's shortcomings this season probably had a little bit more to do with that, even though I think roster construction is a massive part of it. But whether or not it gets fixed next year, it's on Chris Greer anyways, because he brought in Mike McDaniel.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's what – I don't even want to say Stephen Ross, because Stephen Ross is a businessman that owns a team. He's not a football guy. He's not a helicopter dad like I call Jerry Jones. So Stephen is trying to put football people in charge of football. But does he know football people? Because we've seen what the Johnson, what Woody Johnson does in the Jets. Woody Johnson's terrible. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Stephen Ross tries as hard as he can, throws as much money as he can into finding football people to hire football people. Chris Greer was here. His dad was in scouting. His dad was in the league for 40 years. Hell, Chris Greer's been in the NFL since I was coming out. Chris Greer's like 30-year NFL scout, GM, regional scout, college scout, pro football scout. So, like, he's trying to find people to make those decisions. Are they the right people? That's the question.
Yeah.
So I would say Steven's trying as hard as he can. Chris Greer's dropped the ball on this damn Skylar Thompson backup quarterback and solidifying this O-line. But McDaniel, he's the – over the last 3 years, he would be the weakest link in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't argue it, like – I don't know if Stephen Ross is hiring the right people, and track record would say no, just based on results. Just based on results, track record would say no. But whatever, man, it is what it is.
And they missed the playoff and fired Wes Welker. What the hell did Wes Welker do? Man, get out of here. We have to address a problem here. This damn Wes Welker. I don't know what he's doing in that receiving room. Get out of here, man. Wes Welker was the scapegoat.
Would you rather have next season as your Dolphins coach, Mike McCarthy or Mike McDaniel?
Whew. That was a curveball first segment. Probably McCarthy.
What about you, Solana?
We talked it out. Like, I'm putting a lot of this late season, postseason unsuccess on McDaniel.
And I'm not. I was putting more on Chris Greer, but I'm still not thrilled with the idea of Mike McDaniel being this team's head football coach. Mike McCarthy.
Solana, who would you rather have as your GM, Jerry Jones or Chris Greer?
You.
I would love Hawk in the war room on draft night.
Have you heard some of my opinions?
Hey, does this guy call Pizza Czar?
That's exactly where I would start. That's how you learn the character of someone. Do you like Girl Scout cookies? Do you really like Girl Scout cookies? If I said to you, let's go miniature golfing, what would you say? Yeah, I got a whole slew of questions.
First pick, Mr. Hawkman. We're taking the punter out of Southern Kentucky. Huh?
Guy loves Funyuns. I mean, listen, who was the guy asking if your mother's a whore?
Oh, Jeff Ireland, right? Wasn't that Jeff Ireland?
Is that Jeff Ireland? I got to be a better GM than him.
You're a better GM than him. Right now, Hawk, you're a better GM than him.
No, Solana, for real, would you rather have Mike McCarthy or Mike McDaniel?
If Mike McDaniel were let go today, do you think there'd be a team or a line of teams trying to get an interview with him? Because I don't. And McCarthy does have that.
Zach Gelb made a great point last week, remember, where no one's stock has dropped from season 1, 2, 3 more than Mike McDaniel. That doesn't mean that he's an abject failure because he's not. He's gone to the playoffs 2 out of the 3 seasons. Like, but I know what you're saying. I do not think there would be a line for him to be a head coach somewhere.
There's at least 2-3 teams that are trying to get interviews. Before he was let go with Mike McCarthy, he's won a Super Bowl. And I know Aaron Rodgers was really the driving force behind it. I get it. But even before this year, before they lost Dak, three 12-win seasons with Dallas, I could build a case for McDaniel, but it's more of like the unknown. Ooh, what if he can turn it around? With McCarthy, you know what you're going to get, which is a well-coached team.
I mean, honestly, so you could extrapolate that out. You would take Pete Carroll over Mike McDaniel.
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
No, because he's got the same background.
I would.
He's older. He's older. Like, but you're getting somebody at that age. Like, how do you know he's not checked out? How do you know he's still willing to give it 100% day in, day out at that age, already a year removed from being a head coach?
And this is no schematic X and O, numbers thing. I like the old school of, like, I like a strong locker room. I like a strong culture. If you want to talk about that, I think it was the same with we're hearing about McDaniel stuff now with Tyreek and all the stuff. Like, I don't think Mike McDaniel has the locker in his pocket in the locker room in his pocket. I think Pete Carroll would have the locker room in his pocket.
It's interesting. It's interesting what's going on. To the point about McCarthy,
Solana's right. 3 win seasons in a row before this season.
Right, but he's got a roster similar to the Dolphins. Like, the Dak Tua thing are very analogous. So I wonder, I'm not certain just based on what their pasts are. If you go, McCarthy, because if you're going to take McCarthy over McDaniel, you're saying he's an upgrade. And I'm not necessarily certain that he is.
Been in it longer, more experience, and I think the locker room would be more settled.
But hasn't had success with the same roster in Dallas.
Very talented roster, top 12 quarterback.
But he's won.
I see your point.
He's won the division. And look, the Dolphins, I told you this stat yesterday or last week. The Dolphins have not won 12 games, Hawk, since 1990. He's done it 3 straight years before this year, before losing his starting quarterback. I'm not taking away from what McDaniel did, 2 playoff seasons, 2 winning seasons before this year. Like, I'm not taking it away from him, but it's not a 12-win season in the NFC East, which is a difficult division to play in. I think that to me is more impressive than...
I'm not arguing with you. I'm not telling you that I don't think he'd be an upgrade over McDaniel. I'm not certain. I really am not certain, but I'm not arguing it with you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's like slam dunk one way or the other. Now, I was going to ask you about the Dolphins running it back with the big three, as I call them, Chris Greer, Mike McDaniel, and Tua. But then today we learned that Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys are parting ways. And I asked Crowder and Solana at the beginning of the show today, who would you rather have if you're the Dolphins right now as your head coach, Mike McCarthy or Mike McDaniel?
I would go Mike McCarthy. I mean, that's a guy who's actually won playoff games. He's won a Super Bowl. He has a track record of success. And I know this year didn't go well for Mike McCarthy, but he did have 3 straight 12-win seasons before this year. And I actually think he did a nice job down the stretch. I mean, the Cowboys were 4-1 at one point with Cooper Rush as their backup quarterback. I think Mike McDaniel would love to have a 4-1 record with his backup quarterback. And I would argue that after 3 years, Mike McDaniel really hasn't maximized the talent of the Dolphins team. He's been handed a lot of talent, especially on offense, and still has yet to win a playoff game. And it's a team that I still have some questions about, their overall toughness and their ability to overcome obstacles. So I would take Mike McCarthy, and I'm shocked the Cowboys are moving on. I think they're crazy for having made that move. Jerry Jones, you have to wonder if finances are getting in the way and if he's just being cheap again. But I think Mike McCarthy is a pretty good coach, and I would expect him to get another job here.
And Ben, the Patriots, I'm sure we'll talk about that in a second, but they already hired Vrabel. But who's the class of this offseason coach shuffle, as they say? Kingsbury, I heard, talking about with Dallas, and then and Flores is up there still, both retreads as head coaches. Ben Johnson is a big name. Aaron Glenn, Vrabel's taking off. Who do you think is going to have most success when hired as a head coach?
I mean, yeah, if I were a team with a quarterback, Cliff Kingsbury would be one of the first people I would look at, just with what he's done with Jaden Daniels this year. Just remarkable work with that rookie quarterback. I would think if there's one guy who's got the most interest, it has to be Ben Johnson from the Lions. I think he, you know, for the category of like the young hotshot offensive, you know, guru, Ben Johnson's at the top of the list right now. And the things that they've been doing with that offense in Detroit are pretty special, especially with Jared Goff at quarterback. It's not like he was handed Patrick Mahomes or anything. So I think Ben Johnson is probably, you know, the guy with the most interest, but probably Vrabel too. I mean, I think the Patriots got one of the top guys out there. And when I was looking at the six jobs available, I think the Patriots were probably the best job too. And it's all because of Drake May. Obviously the Patriots roster is a mess and there are questions about the front office and this team has a long way to go, but they have cap space and the number four pick and they've got Drake May. So now they've got Mike Vrabel too. Now they've got a legitimate coach. So I think the arrow is definitely trending upwards for the Patriots.
And Ben, with Coach Mayo, a friend of mine, actually, you know, we played at the same time, around the same age. Was he just a placeholder to figure out what happens after Belichick? Because I don't know, did he mess up this year? The roster was bad. I think you even said it. They had a number five and six receiver. They didn't have a 1, 2, 3, or 4. Like, what went wrong with Mayo?
I mean, I think two things can be true. I think he was totally set up to fail, was put in an impossible situation with a terrible roster, and then no experience on his staff. And part of that's kind of his fault because he doesn't have much of a network. He's never been anywhere outside of Foxborough, so he didn't have – you know, a network of coaches to rely on, but, you know, a first-time play caller, first-time defensive coordinator, first-timers all across the position coaches. So I think Mayo was set up to fail, no question. At the same time, he didn't do anything to help his own cause, and the team got worse as the season went along. They came out of their bye week towards the end of the season and played their worst stretch of football, which is never a good sign. You didn't see any signs of improvement, any signs that Gerard Mayo really – you know, was taking the job by the horns and really, like, you know, establishing himself. His fourth down decision-making was painfully conservative. He constantly was saying things on the podium that he had to walk back the next day. It just – he looked overmatched from the start, and I think the Crafts, you know, realized in the last month of the season that it was just a mistake to elevate him and to just hand him the job. The Vrabel was available. I think the Crafts weren't expecting Vrabel to be available last year and ultimately stuck with their commitment to Gerard Mayo, but weren't willing to give him more than 1 year to prove himself. And now with Vrabel still available, I don't think they were going to waste that opportunity. And they moved very quickly throughout this process. Clearly they had Vrabel in mind and they worked backwards to make it happen, including kind of making a mockery of the Rooney Rule this past week. But, you know, the Patriots, they didn't really go through a search, but they landed on the right guy with Mike Vrabel. I think he was the best fit for what they're looking for right now and brings a lot more credibility to the football team.